The luckiest person on that day was a graduate student named Harry Glicken. He had been manning an observation post 5.7 miles from the mountain, but he had a college placement interview on May the 18th in California, and so he had left the site the day before the eruption. His place was taken by David Johnston. Johnston was the first to report the volcano exploding. Moments later, he was dead. His body was never found. Glicken's luck, alas, was temporary. 11 years later, he was one of 43 scientists and journalists fatally caught up in a lethal outpouring of superheated ash, gases, and molten rock, what is known as a pyroclastic flow, at Mount Unzen in Japan, when yet another volcano was catastrophically misread. Volcanologists may or may not be the worst scientists in the world at making predictions, but they are without question the worst in the world at realizing how bad their predictions are. Less than 2 years after the Unzen catastrophe, another group of volcano watchers, led by Stanley Williams of the University of Arizona, descended into the rim of an active volcano called Galeras in Colombia. Despite the deaths of recent years, only 2 of the 16 members of Williams' party wore safety helmets or other protective gear. The volcano erupted, killing 6 of the scientists, along with 3 tourists who had followed them, and seriously injuring several others, including Williams himself. In an extraordinarily unself-critical book called Surviving Galeras, Williams said he could only shake my head in wonder when he learned afterward that his colleagues in the world of volcanology had suggested that he had overlooked or disregarded important seismic signals and behaved recklessly. How easy it is to snipe after the fact, to apply the knowledge we have now to the events of 1993, he wrote. He was guilty of nothing worse, he believed, than unlucky timing, when Galeras behaved capriciously, as natural forces are wont to do. I was fooled, and for that I will take responsibility. But I do not feel guilty about the deaths of my colleagues. There is no guilt. There was only an eruption. But to return to Washington. Mount St. Helens lost 1,300 feet of peak, and 230 square miles of forest were devastated. Enough trees to build 150,000 homes, or 300,000 in some reports, were blown away. The damage was placed at $2.7 billion. A giant column of smoke and ash rose to a height of 60,000 feet in less than 10 minutes. An airliner some 30 miles away reported being pelted with rocks. 90 minutes after the blast, ash began to rain down on Yakima, Washington, a community of 50,000 people about 80 miles away. As you would expect, the ash turned day to night and got into everything, clogging motors, generators, and electrical switching equipment, choking pedestrians, blocking filtration systems, and generally bringing things to a halt. The airport shut down, and highways in and out of the city were closed. All this was happening, you will note, just downwind of a volcano that had been rumbling menacingly for 2 months. Yet Yakima had no volcano emergency procedures. The city's emergency broadcast system, which was supposed to swing into action during a crisis, did not go on the air because the Sunday morning staff did not know how to operate the equipment. For 3 days, Yakima was paralyzed and cut off from the world, its airport closed, its approach roads impassable. Altogether, the city received just 5/8 of an inch of ash after the eruption of Mount St. Helens. Now bear that in mind, please, as we consider what a Yellowstone blast would do.